I think we are on verse 20 of chapter 31. Jacob is heading out of town. He's gathered up his kin and he's moving to Beverly. He loaded up the truck and he's heading for Beverly Hills. Now, before he leaves, if you will remember, his wife takes the household idol. And there was various reasons for that. One, it had value. Two, it's what she was always known. And you know, one of the most interesting explanations I heard was that he would use it to find them. That it would be something he would invoke to find them. So what she was trying to do was stop him from having the ability to find them. All those are interesting. We really don't know. But anyway, that's where we pick up. Now, Jacob is just on the outside of the Promised Land. And he is on the east side of the Jordan River, on the northeast corner up in there. And he's running, he's leaving, he left in the middle of the night, and for 3 days Laban didn't know, but Laban finally catches up, him and his sons and his men. He doesn't have all these head of cattle and all this stuff to move, so he's just going with the idea of anger. I mean, he's loaded for bear. So that's where we're picking up. And Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River and set his face towards the hill country of Gilead. A move of faith, by the way, because he knew there's a reason he snuck away, because he knew it was dangerous. So he has danger behind him, and in front of him is Esau. Esau lives in that territory right on the other side of the Jordan River. He owns it. He doesn't live there. He runs it. So he's got bad news behind him and bad news in front of him. So what he's doing is really an act of faith. If he'd have just stayed where he was, nothing bad would have happened, you know, but he would have never become what he could have became. And all of us face those things where we're tested on our faith. What do you want more, comfort or the will of God? And it shows up quite a bit. If you look for it, you'll see that that's what's happening. You're always being challenged with comfort or security. Security is the big one. I'm very secure where I am right now, and I don't want to be insecure. I've spent a lot of time trying to be secure, and now you're telling me not to be. And God's saying, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Because if you want blessed, then that's what you got to do. Okay, Genesis 28, a little bit back, a few chapters back, it says, and this is pertinent. When he was heading that away, he said, Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, which is up to the end all he had, because Laban didn't give him anything. And I return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. This stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So this is that moment where he is obeying what he said 20 years before. And I just wanted to remind you that he made a vow. If you're wondering why he's going back and facing all this, that's why. Which is, you know, we surely talk about the character or lack of character of Jacob and his shenanigans and skullduggery, but this is there. I mean, there is something there that the Lord sees and values, and he never forgot. And once again, it's interesting. He says, all he asked for when he went up there was food and clothes. And God blessed him. And he said, and then basically he says, whatever you bless me with, I'll give you a tenth. He didn't ask for anything more. He says, whatever you decide to bless me with, I'll give you a tenth. Well, he comes back with this whole army of sheep. I mean, they're like you would have seen it on a satellite. There's just so many sheep. And that's what he's coming back with. And that's the spot where he is. When it was told to Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. So it takes him 3 days later, 7 days' journey, so 10 days after he leaves.
I'm sorry, which verse?
31:23. I believe so. Unless I'm making something up. No, there is a possibility that I'm making stuff up. So anyway. Then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey. This, once again, this is the area east of the Jordan River from Galilee to the Dead Sea. Israel, a little map of Israel, all you need to know in your mind is it's sort of a figure eight. It gets narrow in the middle and goes like that. And then there's the Sea of Galilee with a line, and then the Dead Sea below it. That's Israel, you know, when you get it in your mind. So between Galilee and the Dead Sea, over to the east, is where he is up in this corner. They're still a good bit out, but they're really close to the promised land. Well, it's not the promised land yet, but yeah. Well, sure it is. He promised it to Abraham. Then something interesting happens. So he's got his people. He's caught up. It didn't take him long to catch up. He's coming down hunting for bear, and then once again, God intercedes. God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream of the night and said to him, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." What he's saying to him is, you stay out of this. You got no say in what Jacob is doing, neither good or bad. And it goes back to Genesis 23 with Abraham and Sarah. If you remember, God came to Abimelech, who was the king, and in a dream of the night said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman who you have taken, for she is married." So I'm not sure. These are folks who obviously believe dreams, who looked at dreams. I mean, we can go all the way through the prophets and the dreams. Pilate's wife's dream in the New Testament. If you've ever had a dream, and I put no theological credence in this. This is anecdotal. This is my experience. I don't ask anybody to believe anything. I've had dreams that when I woke up, I knew or strongly believed they meant something. They were different from any other dream I've ever had. They were powerful. They had meaning. They were deep. They seemed more real than life to me. I mean, there was an emotional attachment to it. I don't know if that's what this is, but it was enough to have the desired effect. Well, however God spoke to Laban, it impacted him. It scared him. Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the swords? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with joy, with song, and with timbre and lyre?" Now, what he's talking about is it was customary in those days in that area, whenever someone was leaving on a journey, they would have a celebration, and the celebration would follow you for like a half a day's journey, and they would... Couldn't you just say they're really happy to see you go because they're playing the instruments? But it was customary to come for the traveler from the beginning of their journey with a celebration of feast and music. And so what he's saying is, you've denied me a going away party. Well, yeah, he's saying that, but I think it has a whole lot more to do with those sheep that he brought with him than anything. And those sheep were what he agreed to. I mean, let's not forget that. We talked about it before. Jacob had made a deal that sounded too good to be true to Laban. You know, I'll just take the misfits, the ones that look different. Well, of course, when the Lord gets involved, whatever he blesses works. And, you know, he had obviously done much better. He said, "And did not allow me to kiss my sons," his 11 grandchildren, "and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful, do not speak either good or bad to Jacob.' Now that you have indeed gone away because you have longed greatly for your father's house, but why did you steal my God?" In this conversation, they're working out their issues that have gone on over the 20 years. What he's saying is, you know, God tells them, you know, don't do anything. You get involved in this, you're going to have to answer to me. So he brings it up. You know, that's odd. It is in my power, but I'm not going to. You know what I mean? It's a strange thing. Like, I'm doing you a favor, when the truth of the matter is God told him not to. So we work our way through it, and we get to this point where he needs to be mad about something. He's obviously mad, and he needs to focus it on something. And he said, "Why did you steal my gods?" If you remember, she had taken Rachel had taken the household god. And then Jacob replied to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters by force." So he answers the first part of the question, "Why indeed have you gone away? Because you have longed so greatly for your father's house." So he's answering the first part of the question here. He says, "Well, you know, I snuck away because you're you." And he said, "Apparently I did the right thing, because look what you're doing right now. You'd have never left me leave. Now I'm gone already, and we're going to have to deal with this one or another because I'm not there anymore." The one with whom you find the gods shall not live. There's a little warning here about making dramatic statements. And sometimes when we feel so right and somebody else feels so wrong, we tend to go out on the dramatic when there really is no need to. And it's hard to stop yourself from doing it, from swearing, I swear that, or just taking it where Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't make vows. This goes back to, what's his name in Judges, whose daughter comes out of the house. I will offer to you the first thing that steps out of Japheth. I think it was Japheth's foolish vow. Another, you know, case of this. But the emotion of the time and in the anger, we say stupid things. We always do. Boy, you know, the old count to three isn't nearly enough. Walk away, stop and think, and then speak. Because there's words you just can't take back. And vows, when you invoke the name of the Lord, is one of those things. And the presence of the king, point out what is yours among my belongings, take it for yourself. What he says is, find the gods shall not live. Whoever has it, you can kill them. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. He knows nothing about these gods being missing. So as far as he's concerned, this guy's just making stuff up. That's how he's seeing it. You know, you're just making stuff up. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Then he went out to Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle, and she sat on them. And Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. So, there's a rumpus on top of these air idols, and it's his favorite daughter sitting on top of it. And she said to her father, let not my lord be angry that I cannot arise before you. In other words, I can't get off my saddle, for the manner of a woman is upon me. So she searched, but did not find the high saddle. She can't come clean because her husband had put the death penalty on whoever stole it. She shames the idol by claiming that a woman who was ceremonial unclean has sitting on it, that's a big time no-no. You know, even for them, that's ceremonial unclean. Just like with the law of the Lord, and she is sitting on the god while being unclean. So she stole from her dad, and then she lied to dad. So you can see what kind of relationship we have with dad at this point. That she was afraid she's going to die. Then Jacob became angry. No, he's come down, made all these accusations. He's treated him poorly for 20 years, and now finally he's mad. And he became angry and contended with Laban. And Jacob said to Laban, what is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? He turns the tables when the idol's not found. Unfortunately, the idol was there. Jacob cleared the air between them. Though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all of your household goods? Set it before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may be decided between us. So whatever you found, put it out there. You know, let's prove it. These 20 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flock. That's interesting because he says rams, because if you want a herd to grow, you do not kill the females. Like when they want to drop the deer population in an area, they issue more doe tags. Because killing a male kills one. Killing a female over a three-year period, like with deer, they drop two. That's 15 that you killed that aren't going to be there. So how you control population is either by letting the females. So back in those days, they didn't eat the females unless they were lame or so old they couldn't produce. What they ate was the males, because you're cutting your own throat. That which is torn of the beast I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was by the by day, the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and I guess that's the desert has always been that way. And my sleep fell from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house, I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. What he's saying is you lied to me 10 times about what you were going to pay me. 10 times you told, he kept every 2 years, he made an agreement, this is what I'll pay you for your work, and then when it came time to pay him, he didn't pay him that. 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands. So he rendered judgment last night. What he's saying is, when he said to him about the dream, he says, you know what? That dream came to you because God is, I deserve this. That was God speaking to you to be just. He says, everything that I have is what I should have. You know, you were wrong, I wasn't. And that's when he was saying render judgment last night, he's talking about the dream. When he says, leave him alone. He said, when God's told you to leave me alone, this is why. Because you were a crook. And then Laban replied to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. Typical male ego, we men are men, and just wanting to prove who he is. But then he says, but what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have born? So what he's finally saying is, yeah, I could take all this if I want, but as I sit here and look at it, what can I really do? They're my daughters, and these are my grandchildren. So now, come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. The marriage covenant, when it was made between him and his daughters, should have covered this. So, and actually, Laban already broke it. I mean, they already made a covenant 20 years back, and that would all, you know, let your people be my people and my people be your people. And Proverbs 16:7 has a nice little saying for this. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. And, yeah, you don't have to placate people. Who you have to please is God. God handles people. Then Jacob took a stone and set up as a pillar. There's a lot of stones being set up throughout the Old Testament. They are making pillars everywhere they go. They make a note of it. They tell you that they're doing it because it's important. The way that which the covenant was ratified was by a heap of stones being laid in a circular pile. They would set out stones in a circle to serve as seats. In the center of the circle, a large one was set up perpendicular for an altar. So they would make a circle and put a large stone in the middle of it. It is probable that a sacrifice was first offered, and then that of the feast reconciliation was partaken of by both parties seated on the stones around it. To this day, heaps of stones, which have been used as memorials, are found abundantly in the region where these transactions took place. So apparently, if you go through the deserts and through the hill country, you still find these piles of stones from thousands of years back. There's just so many of them. Every time they made, what we do is contact a lawyer and have a paper drawn up. What they do is get a bunch of rocks and put them in a circle. And they always say, so if there's ever an argument or something, they said, let's go look at the rocks. And the rocks, it was the same thing as pulling out that paper. You remember what we did here? And so at that point, somebody has to lie, you know, and break their vow. Jacob said to its kinsmen, gather stones. So they took the stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. So they made it, and then they had a feast. Now Laban called it, oh boy, Jagar Shahadotatha, whatever that is. But Jacob did much better, and he called it Galeed, G-A-L-E-E-D. So that's why we stick with his pronunciation. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore, his name is Galeed and Mizpah. And he said, may the Lord watch between you and me while we are absent from one another. Mizpah is basically a watchtower, a place where you stand and it stands up high. And he said, so now this Mizpah thing, if you will remember what that is, if you've ever seen, they're not so popular now, but when I was younger, there were a lot of the necklaces with the broken necklace that was broken in half, and somebody would wear one half, the other one, and it was usually couples. You know, may the Lord watch between you and me when we're not together. Well, and when I grew up thinking that had to do with marriage and with commitment, a couple, it has to do with a father-in-law and a son-in-law. That's what that whole Mizpah thing is. And he says, if you mistreat my daughters, if you take wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us that sees, God is witness between you and me. Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap and behold this pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness and this pillar is a witness that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap to me for harm. The heap is in between the two. So if you're going to go, if Jacob wants to go kill Laban, he has to go by it. And if Laban wants to come down and kill Jacob, they have to pass by it. And what he's saying, it will always serve as a reminder that we can't do this to each other. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. See, sometimes we still lose the connection between who this is spiritually. That Nahor is still an important person, that the Lord still matters. And this is an important time because this right here, right now, what we're reading is the last time, really, that the connection to that northern family of Abraham's dad and his brothers, Abraham's brothers, is really talked about. From this point on, it's mentioned, and they actually become adversaries. But the family connection from this point on, they both go their own ways. And it seems to they just drift apart. They become this, they become that, and life moves on. They make this treaty, and then they just never really deal with each other again. Not that we're told in Scripture, is the best way to put it. Then, actually, instead of family, in the next couple of generations, they become foreigners. The idea that their family is lost. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain, and he called his kinsmen to the meal, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons, his grandsons, and his daughters, and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. And we got a couple more minutes. 32. And now as Jacob went on his way, the angels of God met him. This is just fascinating. 2 Kings 6, 14 through 17. The angels are... Every once in a while, the Lord throws something in here to remind you that he's involved. Everybody's doing what they're doing. You know, they have this meeting, and they settle business. And then the supernatural things show up that have always been there. You just don't know they're there. And when they show up, it reminds you that they're there. They've always been there. God is involved in all these processes as much as he's involved in your life. You know, the angels, what's it say? There's more rejoicing in heaven than one sinner repenting, than somebody who already knows me. And so heaven is watching. The angels are watching. They're involved. It matters to them what happens to us because it matters to God. And they are, from 2 Kings, the king of Aram was sent to capture Elijah, and this is what it said. He sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the attendant of the man of God had arisen early in the morning and gone out, behold, an army of horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" And he answered him, "Don't fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." That's an often quoted thing. And Elijah prayed and said, "Oh Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see," which would give you an idea that Elijah's eyes were open. He always saw it. But he says, this kid's scared. Open his eyes. Let him see what I'm seeing. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elijah. And the old chariots of fire reference from the movie, you know. And Psalms 34, 7 through 8, the angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him. This isn't poetry. This is telling you what's actually happening. And rescues them. Oh, taste and see the Lord is good. How blessed the man who takes refuge in him. Hebrews 1, New Testament stuff, 1:14. Are they not all ministering spirits sent to render service for the sake of those who inherit salvation? Yellow. Yeah, we stopped to give you your stuff and you weren't there, so we'll stop on the way back, all right? Yeah, he's knocking on the door, and I was ringing your phone, and okay. That'll work. Yep. All right, we'll see you in a little bit. All right. Scott. Anyway, sorry about that. Sorry out there in TV land. He said, are they not all ministering spirits set out to render service for the sake of those who inherit salvation? If you think of a mission of an angel, ministering spirits sent out to render service to you. That's how important you are and what you are doing is. I don't care who you are. It doesn't say the ones that are pastors or the ones that are bishops or the ones who are missionaries. It says those who inherit salvation. All of us. It revolves around you. It always has. And I keep telling people that. This whole creation, the whole purpose for all this is you. Not because you deserve it, which is the pride part, but because he wants to. He loves you. That is why. And back to Jacob. And Jacob said, when he saw them, this is God's camp. He saw so many, he said, well, this must be where God camps, because they're all here. And so he named that place Maniam. And Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land. Okay, so he's free of the danger behind him, and now he's facing the danger in front of him. And before he acts and does anything, the angels show up just to give him that little boost of confidence. We're here. And there's so many that he calls it the camp of God. So he sees this overwhelming number. Whether it's a vision, it doesn't matter, but it builds his faith. So the first thing he does after he sees that is he takes an act of faith, and he sends messengers to his brother Esau. Instead of just sitting there where he was, he says, well, let's get this ball rolling. And in the country of Edom, Edom is always that right across the Jordan, over back there. It's like desert and hill country. It's the highland wilderness to the east and south of Canaan. He had commanded them, saying, thus you shall say to my Lord Esau, thus your servant Jacob. You can see by the thing, Lord Esau, servant Jacob. I have sojourned with the land of Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks and male and female servants. And this is a pretty long message for this dude to take. I have sent to tell my Lord that I might find favor in your sight. The messenger returned to Jacob, saying, you have came to your brother Esau. And furthermore, he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Well, that didn't go exactly how I planned. They don't have an answer. What did he say? He goes, well, he didn't say nothing. He just hopped on the old horse or camel or whatever he's riding, and they're coming this way, 400 of them. And 400 warriors. I mean, that's what this guy does. He's, honestly, he's not a shepherd. He's a warrior, and he has an army. And as humans, we have learned that it's generally safer to assume the worst. There's a reason we assume the worst, because it prepares us for the worst. I mean, it seems to be what we naturally tend to do. I always tell Lauren, or anybody who, she's always stressed over school or something, I say, honey, stop and ask yourself out loud, what is the worst possible thing that could happen? Say it. What is the worst possible thing that could happen here? Okay, if that happens, what happens to you? And work your way through it. Manage it, you know what I mean? Then you can prepare for it. Jacob had good reason to fear the worst. He hornswoggled Esau of his birthright, and then he stole his blessing. He had left Canaan because Esau wanted to kill him. That's the reason he went up there. Mom said, you better get out of town because your brother's coming to kill you. And now he's returning with his goats, children, and now Esau was coming to him with 400 warriors. He's had, I assume, we have no history of him having any contact with his brother, no peace offerings over those 20 years. He's just showing up. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Of course he was. This mighty man of faith, this patriarch of the nation of Israel and of our spiritual patriarch, was greatly afraid and distressed. So if you find yourself greatly afraid and distressed, well, join the club. And the Lord had done some amazing things. He had intervened with him with Laban, and God told him that he did. I came in a vision. Then he shows him all these angels. God had given him reason not to be greatly afraid and distressed. But when you see 400 people coming and you hear they're coming, then what the Lord shows you just becomes a little duller, and this becomes a little brighter. And he divided the people who were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. For he said, if Esau comes at one company and attacks it, then the company which is left will escape. We'll end it there, but think about the distress of this moment. I mean, we could just read that, but I want you to stop and think. These are your wives, your children, the people you love and care for, every possession that you have, everything that is your life. Everything that matters to you, that has ever mattered to you, is right here with you. And you have to divide it so that one half can survive. That's how distressing this is. I mean, he honestly believes my brother is coming to kill us, and whatever one he picks, half he picks to slaughter, it'll give some time. The time it takes to slaughter them will give us some time, at least half of us, to get away and just vanish and go and at least live as nomads or whatever we're going to do. this is an extremely distressful situation, and what he decides to do here tells us this. He's hoping one half of them could survive. That's what he's hoping. And we'll pick off there because it just becomes really fascinating from this point. Esau is one of the most amazing people in Scripture.
He just ride with his posse. So he rides with him. That's a norm.
It ends up being one of the greatest acts of grace, a lesson from the heathen, honest to goodness, a lesson from the heathen about how we should act. And it's always a little embarrassing to have that. And it's just in this moment of reckoning, before it comes, where the harm I've caused, what we just talked about before. You know, Lord, I hurt somebody. Well, now it's all coming home. This is that great moment of, wow, I have to deal with what I've done. And the reckoning is coming. And it's coming, as far as he knows, with a vengeance. Because there is no good news from his... None of his people come back and says, oh, your brother was received us. And there was none of that. He just comes back and says, yeah, we told him you're here. And he saddled up and he's heading your way. Without any, oh, that's nice. It's just him and 400 men. Just so you know, he doesn't stand a chance. That 400 men on horses with warriors, running away is the only option. Standing and fighting is not even an issue. Don't even think about it. You can't win. So we'll leave off with Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Let's pray. Father, as always, we thank you for your word and for how it speaks to us. And we ask that these situations speak to the things we do in our lives, individually and as a church. When it comes galloping at us, what are we going to do? Lord, help us to learn from this. Let these lessons find a home in our hearts. And when they do, let them change us so that we could become part of the solution in this world, part of the light on the hill instead of the darkness in the valley. And watch over my brothers and sisters. Make them strong, wise, brave, and compassionate. Help me glorify your name and what they think, do, and say. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a great week.